There's a lot to say when buying a new home or car, but only one thing to say that can help you protect them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. And just like that, a State Farm agent will be there to help you choose the coverage you need, no matter where you are in life. When you need coverage options, your State Farm agent is there to help, on the phone or in person. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 727. Ah, 727. It has a nice symmetry to it. It's palindromic. It's nice, neat, concise. I enjoy the number 727. Let's find out what's going on in the Nerdist community. On the Nerdist community corkboard, here's a delightful electronic missive from Rudray Quatrin. Hello, Katie, Kyle, Chris, Matt, Jonah, blah, 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 blah. Anybody further included behind the scenes? I am a longtime listener of the Nerdist Podcast. Everything that Chris's team, blah, 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 especially helps me in a personal way whenever you exhort your listeners to go make a thing. We do. We tell you, go make a thing. Go make your damn thing. My friends and I have done just that and launched our own podcast titled The 20-Sided Theater. The basic concept is after a D&D-style party has finished their adventuring, the bard of the group takes his notes, adds some spice to them, and reworks everything into a voice play for scry casting, or in real-world terms, a podcast. So it's sort of like a D&D episode of any sitcom, but instead of watching the players and having to imagine the characters, the audience can hear the characters and vaguely imagine a group of players sitting around a table. They publish episodes 0 and 1, available on iTunes or at 20sidedtheater.com. And they've parked 4 different spellings of that domain, so it doesn't matter how you spell 20 in words or numbers, and it doesn't matter how you spell theater with an ER or a tra. So well done, 20 Sided Theater. Plus, we will be back next week on At Midnight at 11 p.m., new time for a few weeks, before Trevor takes over the Daily Show. We're just filling in the time slot starting September 8th. We'll be on at 11. We have amazing guests and fun stuff planned for an earlier time slot. Oh my God, please watch a show. I'm nervous. You know, it's the Daily Show time slot. It's hallowed ground. Please don't let everyone think we fucked it up. Please watch the show At Midnight's back next week for 3 weeks, starting September 8th at 11 p.m. and then returning after that to our regular At Midnight time slot at midnight. This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is The Violent Femmes, who are fucking awesome. Oh my God. So we went to SIR Recording Studios in Hollywood, where we record most of our music podcasts. They're very nice people, and we thank them. And I'd never met the Violent Femmes before, but of course, been a fan since forever. And they were fucking rad! To the extent that I requested a song, I said, would you mind playing Blister in the Sun? Which I'm sure they hear that all the time, and they were so gracious about it. And then Gordon Gano said, sure, but you have to sing it with us. Now, this is one of those moments that you fantasize about in your head where you're just in an audience and a band points at you and they're like, you, get on stage, we need you. And of course, in your head, you mildly shit your pants, but you get up and do it. I heavily shit my pants. I almost didn't do it because I didn't want to ruin their song. And you know me, I like to sing songs, and I know it's annoying sometimes, but I just couldn't. I didn't want to be irritating about it, but they asked, and I was challenged, and I had to do it, and it was fucking amazing. It was amazing. Truth be told, I excused myself to the bathroom before they played. I said, oh, I have to pee. I went into the bathroom and ran the song really fast to make sure I didn't fuck it up, because I was very nervous. I periscoped the whole thing, which unfortunately you can't see anymore, but it was one of the most amazing experiences of my podcast life. So I thank them wholeheartedly, and you should absolutely worship the Violent Femmes. Their new EP is out right now. It's called Happy New Year. And pick it up. Good dudes. Very good dudes. Which is episode number 727, which is the Violent Femmes. Katie, why can't you start just the thing? Why can't you start just one thing?
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Oh my god, that's awesome!
And we're also real fans of the At Midnight Show.
Holy shit, that's amazing!
Yeah, really. Really,
I appreciate that.
It's like finally I meet somebody that I've seen on television. It's kind of cool. I knew I'd get a benefit out of this someday. It only took like 35 years, but here we are.
No, this can't be the moment.
It's one of them.
Oh my god, that's
it's
crazy.
Definitely one of them.
What do you guys watch? What else do you guys watch? Do you get to watch TV much?
Oh, man, what else? Trying now to catch, and which is pretty easy to do, anytime anyone's reporting on what Trump last said. I am, like, staying up late trying to, I don't care if I've seen it already.
Oh, my God.
I want to see it again.
That's amazing that you just said that, because we just, that's amazing. We just had, I just came from my Midnight Writers meeting for tonight, and of course there's a Trump thing. And the we're in this weird gray area where we're like, we can't not talk about it, but we're just perpetuating it, but it's so fucking bonkers.
It's amazing stuff.
And so we were thinking, like, do we just house it in its own segment, like a recurring Trump segment?
Make it a highlight
reel. What are you going to do? Yeah.
So my theory about him is that he I don't think he has enough steam to win anything, but I think what's remarkable about him is that he genuinely doesn't give a fuck. And what's interesting about that in politics is that the rest of them care so much that they're all doing the dance, and he's just trolling literally every... Like, who the fuck is he appealing to? But he's appealing to people that... When people are apologetic, then I think people sort of, like, don't respect them. But even if someone says some batshit, bonkers, crazy thing...
He doesn't. Not only does he not like do any, he just like goes harder with
harder.
It. Yeah,
and I think that confuses people, and they go, "Oh, well, I guess he must know something because he's not, because he hasn't really. I mean, because if you were wrong, he would apologize, right? Because you can't say that.
Well, he's also, it seems like other the advisors and the political maybe instinct or advisor would be, then you start saying stuff like, you know, you can, like some senator or somebody that came up with statistics and then was proven that it was completely false. It was like, well, I didn't mean those. My comments were not meant to be factual.
Yeah.
You know? you say something. You do something, but not, no?
He might be the fucking candidate this country deserves. Like, he might. I mean, this weird age. Because I could totally see a debate where if someone said, well, Mr. Trump, I don't understand.
I'm looking forward to that. I want to watch that debate.
Because you know you want him to go, oh, why don't you shut your goddamn mouth and on live television, you stupid piece of shit. And then everyone go, and then have him go, what? And then they're
he
like,
might,
oh, I guess.
Might, that might be.
It might.
Keep him going up.
It might.
You know, in the polls, whatever. Anyway. So, yeah, currently, we just keep, like, seeking out, like, who's talking about it again or showing the clip again.
It's our own sort of long-running cultural reality show that's happening
with Trump at the moment.
But it's... I don't know.
I'm going to find out this is a James Franco, like, art piece. Like, him and Donald Trump have teamed up.
There was a theory that was floated
today. It's a performance
today.
Art.
Yeah,
sort of.
Exactly.
They hired actors, I guess, for the first one of his announcement. You read about that, right?
No.
Oh, he put out, it was a casting call for the people to wear shirts about Donald Trump, and he denied it, but they found all the evidence on it. That's like, it's a call for extras, like movies and stuff, and that was to come and show up and to cheer for him when he announces his candidacy.
That explains why Michael Caine was there, because he'll just appear and stuff.
He does like Craigslist.
Yeah, he just appears. And so, but we were sort of joking that he was going to pull his mask off and it was going to be Shia LaBeouf. Like, we were convinced that it was going to be somewhere. I just hope at the end, when it's all over, he's like, hey guys, now I'm going to level with you. I said a lot of crazy shit, but I was just trying to make sure
the other candidates focused on the real issues. Thought process behind it. Interesting.
There was a guy when I went to UCLA. There was a guy who used to show up every once in a while, and he used to say very inflammatory things in the main quad, and all the students would you know, be really pissed off and get in his face. And apparently his tactic was to say very contrary, horrible things because it got students engaged in talking about real social issues. I'd like to think that's what's happening with Trump, but I think he might just be batshit crazy.
It's just the most elaborate O. Henry story of them all.
You don't live in Los Angeles? Do you live in L.A.? Or?
No. Recently Denver. Before that, New York for a couple decades.
Denver's a great town.
I'm really liking Denver.
Oh, my gosh. I'm jealous. Whenever I go there.
Are we doing it? Is this it already? I should get more on the mic. You could get on the mic, or you could lean back.
You know, because you lean back, people hear like, he's relaxed. He's kicked back. He's having a good time. But you're from Wisconsin?
The band started in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And I was just talking to somebody today saying that my family moved there when I was 10 years old, and then basically I lived there for 10 years. And then the band started when I was about 18. And my whole time being there, going through school, people would say to me periodically, "You're not from here. Where are you from?"
Mm-hmm.
Because of your bizarre accent. Exactly. And when I moved there, it was like, what are these people? They have different words for things. Yeah, it's my accent. It's my accent and my vocabulary. Sometimes I had different words.
We don't even have a dialect. It's like a different language there in Wisconsin.
Sometimes. There's aspects of that. So my whole experience there, you're not from here. Where are you from? And my extended family was not from there. My father went there for his work. And now, forever, in the whole world, I'm from Wisconsin because that's, you know, that's what it says. When somebody looks up the bio, that's where I'm from. But it's funny because, you know, you're not from here. Where are you from? But now that's where I'm from because of the group. And that's fine.
Where do you feel like you're from?
I ask because I have the same problem.
I used to feel like I was from New York City because I was born there.
Yeah.
And moved out when I was a year old, but I was to Connecticut. My family moved out. But I think there's those initial that are not consciously available, but, you know, soaking in everything.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's there. But I don't really even feel like that's really the truth of it. You know, I don't know. I think that we're all from somewhere that we you know, most of us probably don't know.
I think Milwaukee is a fantastic town, and I because it's got a good Milwaukee, and then also over in Minnesota, Minneapolis, great town. And my theory is that it's so fucking cold most of the time in those towns that people actually go watch shows and they are engaged because it's too horrible to go outside most of the time.
Anyone want to feel that from the cold
shows,
regions?
You mean music shows? Or
music
TV
shows,
or
comedy shows. Yeah. They're good. Milwaukee and Minneapolis, Minnesota and Wisconsin, both great comedy towns, I think. Or at least in my
experience.
Well,
you should know, right?
I do, but I don't know if that's everyone's experience. That's just my guess.
Yeah.
I mean, I was just in Milwaukee. I fucking tracked down the Bronze Fonz and took a picture with it, you know? I was excited.
Oh, the art community are up in arms about that. So we don't spend any money on public art, and then when we do, it's the Fonz.
Well, yeah.
I didn't even know about this. Yeah. I'm not around there, so I didn't know. Although I like Milwaukee.
And furthermore, it was
derivative
because I think Minneapolis has like this bronze Mary Tyler Moore, so they said, let's do the same thing for Milwaukee.
Where is it?
I don't know. I've never seen it.
It's right on the Riverwalk. There's a walk along the river.
That's right. I think I did see it once, and I tried to blot it out of my mind.
But this is.
I'm here to remind you. Yeah. And it's amazing. I took a picture. I jumped on its back and took a picture with it.
That's one of the problems about being from Milwaukee is that people say, "Wow, so that's Laverne and Shirley, right?" And then, like, well. Those are actually fictional characters.
Yeah. A lot of people. Where's the Schatz Brewery?
They think it's a documentary.
It is a documentary. Where are you hiding Arnold's? Because I know it's there. We just couldn't find it. We just couldn't find it before.
It's based on a real place that still exists and makes nice milkshakes and burgers.
What's the place called?
Cops.
I wish I had known that.
I believe you have to jump something on a motorcycle to get there.
I think it's based on that, but maybe I'm wrong.
Another place that
So the band started in Milwaukee, and so we're considered a Milwaukee band, but none of us live there, and haven't been there for a long time.
This is Brian Ritchie talking, and you can tell from he's born and raised Wisconsin.
I'm the only actual true Milwaukeean.
I like you're drawing lines in the sand. It's very tribal.
But now I live in Australia. So
do you really?
Yeah.
What part?
Tasmania.
Holy shit. What?
I guess you can curse on your show.
But here's an interesting thing that I found out when I was in Tasmania, and this will refer back to what Gordon said about Milwaukeeans have different words for things. Like, for example, we do not drink from a water fountain. We drink from a bubbler. So I was down in Tasmania, and someone said, hey, let's go take a sip from that bubbler. And I said, what? Yeah, bubbler. Is that what you call those things? Yes. So there's only two places in the world that call these things bubbler, and it's Milwaukee and Tasmania.
See, sister cities, areas. Yeah. Tasmania's not really a city. But it's you must like it if you live there. What?
You sound incredulous.
Yeah,
well, Tasmania. How often do you hear Tasmania?
We hear it all the time.
Of course you do. But how often do you meet somebody? Because usually it's like, oh, I'm from Sydney or Brisbane or Perth, you know. But I don't. I've never
Melbourne
from Melbourne. But I've never heard Tasmania before. Did you Google other places that use the term bubbler and that one result came up?
I encountered the concept of going to Tasmania when I was working at the Milwaukee Public Library, which was my last proper job before becoming a musician. And my job was to sort the books. And some books came across my desk about Errol Flynn, the actor, who's from Tasmania.
Mm-hmm.
And when I read about that, that made me want to move to Tasmania. So that was a long process.
And then
I got interrupted by a band.
Yeah, but on tour. We got there on tour. That was your first time seeing it, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. But we went there because I requested a gig.
Really?
There. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because the agent that was booking us down there, or the promoter, never sent us to Tasmania. And I was like, send us to Tasmania for once. Oh, no, too isolated. They're hillbillies down there. And so I insisted on it, and we went there, and it was completely sold-out show. It was packed, and it was amazing. But the place is a little bit strange.
So when you started the band, things are so wildly different now, the way that music is distributed, the way that any art is distributed, that it... And even though I was alive back then, very much alive back then, and I remember, we listened to the radio and we bought records, I'm still having a weird time remembering, how did we find out about stuff if it wasn't dictated by some larger company who was like, I'm going to put this on the radio? Like, how did it work?
Well, the thing immediately in my mind, somebody else can try, first off, growing up, I heard so much music in my own family. And then from there go, friends, but even older brothers and sisters. I think that stuff we hear about it all the time with people that from their older brothers and sisters heard about our band. That's how I heard about lots of stuff from older brothers and sisters. So that's immediately in my mind. And I think probably that's still going on, maybe with different ways that... I don't know, anybody?
Yeah,
anybody here got a family?
Except your brother and sister will send you a link now.
Right, exactly.
But you're referring to, like, how did people get to know about Violent Femmes back in the days when we wouldn't have been getting commercial airplay? There was a lot of tape dubbing. People would, like, one person would have the vinyl, and then they'd make 10 copies on cassette for their friends, and those would spread around. And it's probably the same syndrome as, like, illegal downloading now, and probably with a similar result. You get popular. And also... back then, the college radio stations would just play whatever they wanted to. Like they had disc jockeys that could just choose what to play, any song. It didn't have to be the single. It didn't have to be something that the record company necessarily wanted them to play. So they had a lot of choice. And there were a lot of bands like our band, and I guess REM would be another band, or all the bands from that generation benefited from that kind of programming concept. Can you imagine it? Freedom. Like, people playing what you want.
Brian Viglione will be the voice you hear in Now Our Drummer.
I like that you're bookended by Brian's.
Yeah. There's a lot of Brian's. I don't use the word Brian very often, actually, because I can use other names. Because, it doesn't... Yeah.
Well, I'll just add, as we passed Amoeba, an important thing for me was the cool guy at the record store.
Yeah.
I remember being 13 and going into a local, album place, and the guy was like, "Here, check out Big Black, and here's, Pigface and Minor Threat and all these bands." That to me, I was like, I would have never.
You gotta have your guy.
I had the same experience, like growing up in Milwaukee. The record stores, they were the social gathering points. It was a focal point for the community, and there were all the fanzines, and of course, you go in there and you'd ask to listen to the new album by the Ramones or whoever it was that we were curious about at that time. And I was really lucky because they gave me all the what were they called, promotional copies, like the copies that they'd give to the record store for free. I'd get them all. Mm-hmm. So I had a big collection as a result of that. It was a different time.
We mentioned libraries. I heard so much music living in Oak Creek, Wisconsin. And just the public library. That's where I heard most all my David Bowie and Zappa and Velvet Underground and on.
Could you order through your library?
Somebody was. It was amazing.
I'm still
and yet
obsessed
the community,
with my library 'cause of
the
that.
Community is not, imagine Oak Creek, Wisconsin, you probably got it right. So this is not like, I don't know who was there or who was ordering this, but I just ate it up. And then after taking it out a couple times, I went, I put it on a cassette tape and, kept listening to that Bowie over and over.
And then Gordon's mom would say, "Gordon, I just got a call from the library. They say your Velvet Underground album is overdue."
Not true.
Yeah, because I think now that you
say
that,
that's funny. That just sounds funny.
It sounds funny.
Yeah,
it sounds really funny, Mom.
Yeah,
Gordon, would you please return the Velvet Underground to the library? You're going to get fined.
Yeah,
and just the library stamps all the way down the Velvet Underground.
There was nobody taking these things out. It's like if I took one out and then later went and wanted, got it again. It's just like there was nobody.
I can tell you a secret
to it.
This is a trade secret from my days at the Milwaukee Public Library. We had a rule that if nobody took something out for a certain amount of time, I think it was 5 years, we were to discard it.
Mm, right.
So we had a dumpster that we would actually pile up all these books. Some of them were brand new, or some were beautiful. And I even gave you one. It gave you a metal-encased Bible. Do you still have that?
Or, yeah. Every once in a while I see that and think, why do I have this? Yeah, it's pretty beautiful. It's the most beautiful metal-encased Bible I've ever seen.
So that was
like
one
a robo-Bible?
Things that they were just throwing out. So they would throw this stuff out. Well, I grabbed a lot of it. If I was interested in it, that was probably unethical. But still, I thought it was better than sending it to the dump.
Oh, that's, yeah. That's totally,
so the trick
totally
is,
fine.
So you need
totally
to go in and check out every book at the Milwaukee Public Library just once, and then you can immediately return it so that you've given it another 5 years.
You let it live.
That's right.
You let
for
it
another
live.
5 years. Yeah.
And finally, how about the phenomenon of just buying a record purely based on the cover art?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That was great. I mean, you just go, wow, that looks crazy.
I've done that.
Yeah.
Everybody's
times.
Done that,
sure.
I think.
But
what is this?
Yeah. Yeah. What is this going to sound like when it looks like this?
And it's always King Crimson is the answer.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to win this time. Oh, yeah. It's them again. I do seem to recall that my first exposure to the Femmes was mid-80s, and I was in a group. My friend group were sort of the kids that didn't belong anywhere else, and so it was just a handful of a couple nerds and a couple of alterna kids, like trench coat wearing fedora fedora nerds, and it was the group that exposed me to they loved Femmes, they loved Dead Milkmen, Dead Kennedys. They showed me Harold and Maude. We watched Monty Python. Like it was.
I was not aware we were friends in high school.
No, well, it was sort of this this 80s proto nerd group that liked things that you had to sort of work to acquire. Like it wasn't just easily available out in the world. You
There was right. sort of a there was a hunting and a gathering right. aspect
right.
to it,
right.
like a quest.
Yeah,
it was like a quest, and if they could find, you know, if they could track something, oh, you got to hear this, you got to hear this,
mm-hmm.
and that was my first. But then I worked at K-Rock in the 90s,
oh.
and but K-Rock was. What was the thing that sort of tipped you guys? Is there a specific moment, or was it just a collection of things that happened? Was there one moment where you're like, oh shit, now everyone seems to know who we are?
Well, it depends on how, you know, from the matter of perspective that you're looking at it. In retrospect, it seems that we had meteoric success, but on the other hand, we never really had success. It was somewhere in between. You know, like, for example, our first album was a platinum record before it ever entered the Billboard charts, because it didn't really have a single. It did have a single, technically, but it wasn't pushed. And Blister in the Sun was the most popular song, which was never released as a single. It just became a word-of-mouth seller. So we didn't... There was no dramatic moment when we were unknown and suddenly... We became famous, like when the Beatles were on the Ed Sullivan Show or something like that. It was very gradual, and it was a matter of word of mouth, like you and your friends, turning each other onto the femmes and other bands.
I remember one specific. We were on our first all in a van all across the country tour, and our record was out, and it was getting played with a lot of college radio at that time, and so that was huge for us. And we were in Oregon, and I remember. People were singing. I remember that being the first time I really noticed, like, enough people there that they're singing along to these songs. And that was the first time I remember. My first thought was, how do you know this? How do you know this song? And then realize, oh, wait, yeah, we got the record's out. Somebody's playing it on the radio. And obviously their station was playing it. And the people that loved it were there. And they were singing along. And I just, for some reason, I just remember even in the course of that tour, we didn't start there, but something had happened. And at that point was the first time I remember. And even to think, like, how do they know this? Because they've never heard us play before.
Yeah,
but they've heard it.
But that story played itself out. Repeatedly, like, for example,
yeah, sure. At that point, then it started happening everywhere.
Yeah,
much.
And even later on, when other markets opened up, like Eastern Europe, where nobody played, and then suddenly you could play there, and we would go places like Croatia, Serbia, and see the people in the audience all singing along. Some of them were like in tears, crying, telling us, "We thought we'd never see you play." And this is maybe 10 or 15 years after they got into the band. South Africa. And Australia, New Zealand, we'd go anywhere, and there were always a coterie of people who understood the band and loved the music and were deeply into it. And that's still happening, and they're still handing it literally from hand to hand.
Yeah, there's something very specific about your music, though, that it's almost like there's so many songs that are just in the public consciousness, in people's minds, even if they don't know how it got there, you know, like Add It Up or Blister in the Sun or American Music or Gone Down. Like, they're just, if you start singing one, then someone else will sing along with you, or they'll finish it, and then they'll go, oh my God, that was, you know, and it's just like all the words are just ingrained in their brain somehow. Almost like it's the Matrix and we were programmed somehow before we were put in here. But congratulations on being programmed into humanity's brains. But what do you think that is? Like, what do you can you even identify that, or is it just like, yeah, I don't know?
That's a difficult question, because we've got a lot of songs, and we've probably recorded over 100 songs, and a lot of them are really good. And then there are this handful of songs that you mentioned, like Blister in the Sun, Add It Up, that have really gotten into people's minds. But obviously, that's because they have some sort of universal message that we're accessing, or that we've been able to articulate maybe better or in a more concise way than some other people do.
Well, there's also a feeling more than maybe a articulated message.
Because, well, maybe we should ask Vig, because Vig, actually,
yeah.
Our drummer, Brian Vig Leone, he's a recent addition to the band. He's been with us for 2 years, and he comes from the perspective of having been a long-term fan of the band. So, Vig, why don't you shed some light on what it is about those songs that have like hooked people in.
Well, I think, you know, like we were saying, when you have certain bands that are just part of the landscape of your growing up, there's so many people who come up and say, "You guys were what I listened to in high school." And when those songs are always sort of peripherally there on the tape player or the record player or in the car stereo or just in your day-to-day life, I think that sort of accounts for that phenomenon that people absorb these songs, sometimes unconsciously.
Yeah, but I don't still listen to the same. Like, I don't go back and listen to DeBarge records.
No. But yeah, but there's.
I did give up on
liar.
Some of the. Shut your face.
Who's Johnny?
But there's a thing that some of those songs do get passed on in certain ways, and there is that timeless kind of thing about it. Or, you know, there's something that keeps the hooks in you that maybe other bands that are more trend oriented don't necessarily.
I think that's what it is. I think there are some bands that when we're young just happen to capture a cultural moment, mm-hmm. and then when that moment's over, it's like, well, that just sort of swept the band away with it, because it, you know, and. But there's something that I think is more of a sort of a universal human mm-hmm. experience, which I think is what you guys did, which you can just pick up, and it doesn't feel like, oh, this was recorded in the early 80s. It just feels like this is
well,
a band.
That well, was, that's to that, a point that I've heard Brian Ritchie, to all the another Brian, speak about, which right now he was going to just start doing it rather than me giving this completely unnecessary introduction.
The preamble.
Now listen, he's going to say something that's so good.
What points is he going to make?
I've even learned it, and I can do it on my own. I do, because it's really good.
Well,
you're
mouthing
along
while I'm saying it.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
So like I'm like the grandpa that keeps telling the same story over and over again, and everybody, oh, there he goes again.
No, it's a little better than that.
It's interesting that you bring up this point. Of the longevity of the music in our case, because we did do that by design with the first album, intentionally trying to avoid any of the trappings of the music that was around us. Like you talked about a musical style that comes and goes, and you're into it, and then it's gone. We tried not to sound like our contemporaries, and we didn't even try to sound like the stuff from the past. But we tried to create something that could have been recorded prior to that, could have been recorded in the future. Now there are bands recording today that sound a lot like us. So we tried to stay away from anything that would indicate this is from 1982. This is part of a scene. We weren't part of a scene. We were just kind of like off on our own. So it's that it has enabled young people to keep getting into it over and over again without thinking that they're getting into something retro.
Well, it's funny to hear that you saw yourself as the kids who were off on their own, and the group of friends that introduced me to your music was a group of kids who was off on their own.
Well, and you guys worked as a perfect tool for me for friends who like tricking them into liking punk rock. Because you guys had great pop hooks.
Were the gateway drug.
Oh, you absolutely were. I ruined a lot of lives, and it's thanks to you. Because you can put this on and you're like, oh, yeah, I've heard this. This is on the radio, so I can trust it. And then it goes, then you get deeper in there. And that was such a beautiful thing. So it's interesting you say the thing about universal sounding, because that was definitely a beautiful tool to get people to dive into deeper music stuff.
Well, we talk to a lot of fans, so we hear a lot of stories, and some of them are individual, but some of them are recurring. One of the recurring ones is I lost my virginity while listening to your music, usually added up. That's we've heard that many, many times. But
it's
appalling.
It really is.
It's really,
like, if I thought about it, it would be absolutely repulsive.
Yeah, so I want to start a trend of people losing their virginity listening to you talk about Add It Up as opposed to just the song.
And then a girl came up to me recently and said, I was conceived while my parents were listening to your music. And I'm like,
how do you know that?
Well, they told me. But another one that's
right here. That's where I shot it off on your mom. Sleep tight. Tell me that.
TMI. So, yeah. Another thing that they say is.
I think you're thinking right now, we're going to go on with this, but a part of you is absolutely thinking, were my parents listening to any music, right? Have you already started thinking that? And then what was it?
Yeah, if they were, you know, my mom liked the most. My parents like the most straight ahead
It was probably like Barbara Streisand or something, you know. Yeah. My dad listened to country music because it largely irritated my mom, and so I think that was.
While your folks were listening to What Made Milwaukee Famous made a loser out of me.
I don't know what my parents would have been listening to, and let's see. I was born in November of 1971, so that means in the early spring they would have been doing it. I don't know what came out that year, but I can almost guarantee it was something pop. It was some sort
probably
of...
Probably Neil Diamond.
It was probably Neil Diamond.
But you can just go with Al Green was having big hits in the early 70s.
Maybe, but you know,
your
my
folks,
mom...
Your folks... I'm just saying that they like, could, you could just pick Al Green.
It was probably like Paul Anka or something something like that, is my
when
guess.
When was the...
Engelbert Humper.
It was probably Engelbert, yeah.
We had joy, we had fun.
Seasons in the Sun?
We had Seasons in... That was the number one of the year right around then,
Could have been Seasons in the Sun.
I think it was number one.
Yeah, I might have been. I don't know. I'm afraid to ask.
Why is that funny? That's funny, right?
Because it's disgusting.
No, you don't want to ask.
I don't want the answer, and I also don't want to be like, well, there was no music by the dumpster. Like, I don't want to know what the. I don't want to know. I don't want any context for it. You know,
the radio was broken in the car.
Yeah, it was broken in the car. It was, you know. Yeah, we were in jail. Like, I don't know. I just don't. I don't want to know. I don't want to know what it was, you know, or what if it was a key party? Like, you don't know what sort of weird, like, what if you were the product of some gross sexual deviancy and you have no, like, you have no idea at all?
Yeah.
It's like, you know.
Well, okay, what if? Then?
What if?
Yeah.
Yeah, answer that.
What if your dad liked to take a hi-8 footage of being cuckolded by, by the pool guy.
How do you feel about that? What do you think about that?
I don't know. Well,
that could be. You don't know that's not the case.
I look so much like a combination of both of my parents that it's not. I'm not saying my dad couldn't have had an assist, but I definitely.
Finish on a cushion. See, she sat there.
Oh, I think my mom listens to the show, Kyle.
I didn't plan on that.
That was. Yeah,
unless she's like, he knows.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I don't know. I think it's best not to think about it. I think it's. I think it's best to just assume that through osmosis we just appeared on the earth, and that's a lot. That's a lot better, at least for me to process.
Now, if Sharon's that works for you, woman. We can pretend.
I like how the two of you are. You're just like spinning and spinning, like sort
what the,
of like
the,
out
the
there
listeners
somewhere.
Can't see. Yeah. Oh, it is. We are filming this. You can see the agitation, change in. We're not?
No.
I think everything always is.
I guess ultimately that's what I think. Everything at all times.
The government is like, this channel's gross.
Facial coloration.
Isn't that funny that, you know, this Orwellian idea that we're being watched by some governing body, and then what ended up happening was we're all watching each other.
Right.
Like, we are Big Brother.
Right.
We gave up everything that the science fiction pioneers tried to make us paranoid that other people were going to take away from us, we've given up ourselves freely.
Yeah, but to each other.
No.
Yes.
Absolutely to each other.
Right.
It's are you guys sci-fi fans at all?
Was.
What killed it for you?
Growing up.
Oh, that's the saddest thing I've ever heard.
Oh. We'll never get back. We're never invited back on this show. That's it.
Now it has to be weekly as we keep pushing stuff on him. All right, so the book club continues on page 92 with unbreaking eye contact.
What's entertainment in Tasmania? Like, is there specific Tasmanian entertainment that is insulated?
The Woodcutters Hall of Fame.
Ooh.
Yeah. So they have these contests to cut down trees or chop logs up.
Yeah.
It's pretty dramatic, and I think the world champion has come from Tasmania many times. So if you're looking for something that's peculiarly Tasmanian, that would be it. Woodcutting.
Nice. I feel like we all had a riff in our head as a joke, and then Woodcutting Hall of Fame was the real thing. Like, we had a funny answer, and it wasn't
but
that.
No, let that one go.
Top Woodcutting Hall of Fame.
Step down.
Go with that.
Did you... your father was a Baptist minister? Is that correct?
True.
So you grew up in
correct.
A you grew up in a Baptist... But obviously... Not super strict if you were checking out.
Oh yeah, absolutely. My both my parents were also involved in theater, both religious and secular, and so I grew up with my father would play old country songs of all sorts, so it was not anyone hearing I had grew up in that in a home with that designation would get completely the different and incorrect idea about what my growing up was like. Mine was, I would say, in a very liberal and kind of progressive liberal kind of household.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
And so when you started, because you started pursuing music at a pretty young age, they obviously must have been pretty
completely cool with it. Supportive.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, it really was. It was pretty amazing and just great. Just along with the only word of caution being, you know, if this isn't working out for you, you can always, you know, do something else.
And what would that have been?
Well, I don't know. Anything.
You didn't have
anything.
To worry
no,
about
no,
it.
No. It wasn't like, you know, we really want you to do this or that. I had been really into the idea of going to college or university when I was, like, between, like, the age 10 to 12, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then high school beat it out of me, I think. And yet I was told by an older sibling that, yeah, they had the same thing, but university was totally different. They really liked it. I just never got interested again and just felt like, just wanted to just launch and go right into the music. So I never did that. But I think that they would have been happy with that, sure. But they were fine. They never told me, like, what I should do or anything, just to be very supportive.
A punk band with supportive parents.
Yeah.
That's kind of nice.
Yeah. Just, you know, get yourself a Baptist preacher as your dad and you're good. It's all fine.
Are you rebelling against stop being so supportive of me? You understand too much. You understand me too well. I'm sick of it.
Well, actually, a little bit of that.
Yeah.
A little bit of that because now I feel like you're putting yourself out there. I'll put myself out here. This is something I've never spoken about. Maybe only one or two people, and I figure this is a safe place.
Safe.
Yes. With his stop being so supportive, I think my mother in particular had that idea of very progressive, modern, you know, think parenting. And so she wanted to make sure that her children knew that sex is healthy and good.
Mm-hmm.
So both, I know one of my brothers and me would just be, I just know me, just like, please, just don't. She wanted to know it was okay to have that talk.
Sure.
More than once.
Right.
So, and it's like, I don't want to talk about anything sexual with mom.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if she ever really got that. I mean, I'd leave the room. But still, I think the saying is you can't unhear certain things you heard.
Yes.
You know, and she wanted to have, like, free communication and let me know that if I felt like doing this, that she would say what that was, that I should know that's perfectly fine.
Right.
And that's something,
And it ironically, like, spins into not fine.
So don't be that supportive. Stop.
Well, when my mom came to see the band last time,
like this,
she hit on Vig.
Yeah.
What?
Is that true?
Yeah, still got it.
She looked at me dead in the eye and said, "You're never too old." This is something I have never spoken about.
And you said, "That's interesting because Gordon's mom told me a bunch of crazy stuff."
That it's okay if I do.
It's okay if I do.
She's very supportive.
Yeah.
How old are you, Brian?
36.
You're 36. Yes. All right. So you look young. Like you're
36, but you look young.
He looks younger. Like,
I attribute that to the rock and roll drumming lifestyle. Absolutely.
Which is what? A lot
feeling
of cardio?
Happy. Yeah, and feeling happy and getting to do what you like for a living, I think.
Not all drummers, not all drummers age well.
Well, I consider myself lucky, I guess, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, who else? I feel like, well, you know, to be honest,
Keith Moon aged pretty well, didn't he?
I feel like...
We'll never know.
If you consider death pretty well.
Never know.
Well, he looks pretty young when he died. He's looked exactly the same since the 80s as Phil Collins. Exactly the same.
Well, doing a lot of the smoking and drinking stuff never really agreed with me on tour.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that was a factor in there as well.
Yeah.
But we hired him anyway.
Yeah.
Now, did you join the Violent Femmes going, finally, I can build my Tommy Lee style drum kit for this
yeah,
band?
Yeah, we're working on the rotating riser, right? Just like be in the middle of a gyroscope.
Exactly.
And just come out. It's, like,
it's weird. I never expected pyrotechnics at the Violent Femmes concert. And now they have this dragon that's a logo for the tattoos.
Well, you know, dragons are ageless there.
Take notes here.
Yeah.
You said Logan, a dragon for the logo.
Dragon.
I don't think even an old dragon who looks like shit, like he's just aged horribly.
Sounds like a nice cartoon of some sort.
Just old dragon.
Absolutely. So for you, when you have a first album that's so successful, and then you decide afterwards we're gonna move on and try something different, and you constantly try new stuff, is that ultimately what you just want to make stuff that seems fun to try, or you feel particularly inspired, like let's do this specific genre of thing now, as opposed to. Because you could have just done the same thing over and over again, but you didn't, which is a cool thing to do.
I think some of that was directed by the material in that the songs. We had our second album goes into a lot of roots kind of American music of country and folk and jazz and gospel, and it's all mixed up in there. Some songs are more specifically a bluegrass. And some of them blend them, and some of them are very much here is this kind of genre, this type of song. We had all those songs, and we were playing them live along with the songs on the first album before we recorded the first album. And so, again, there was the thinking going into it about the choice of instruments and arrangements, but also the material and selecting the songs, that the first album, by the song choice, is much more of a rock album. And then the second one becomes this mix of older kinds of American music. Now, the first album has sold millions, and the second album has sold hundreds. So that's a slight disappointment for the second album, but I'm thrilled about the sales on the first one. But anyway, people didn't like it at the time. I remember the one person came up to me and was actually, I don't know if they used the word betrayal, but it was that sense.
No. I love that album.
You know, the Hallowed Ground is the name. Hallowed Ground is the name of our second album. And I think in the band, we've often felt like that was our favorite because of some other musicians that joined us, some other great musicians that sat in with us. And that's been a thing that we've done live going through the years is what city that we're in, and maybe we know somebody or meet somebody and we'll have them join us and sit in on some tunes. We're doing that now on tour in a sense with Bare Naked Ladies. We're on tour with them, and we've got a couple of the guys that are joining us on some songs because we talk about it and it's like, why don't you join on this? Oh yeah, that'd be great. Or I want to play on this, and you know, they have this kind of thing. But the first album is more minimal, it's concentrated, it's more of a rock or punk sort of thing with the acoustic instruments mostly. And then we stretched into other things. So I think maybe it's the material, it's two things. It's the type of songs, and then it's also, we did something one way, and then by the time the third album, we got into using a little more of the studio, and we worked with Jerry Harrison, who's in Original Modern Lovers and Talking Heads and then various other projects. And he certainly knew his way around the studio and more things to make use of the studio. So we did some more of those things on that record. So I think with different records, we sometimes have thought about recording in different ways. And now we've been recording again. We've got a new EP out, which is the first new thing of a collection of four songs that we've had out in many, many, many years. I think I read somewhere it's called 17.
What?
Yeah, yeah, right? It's like, well, I knew we had a little time off. But it's like we got these four new songs, real happy.
If you guys were a library book in Milwaukee, you'd have been in deep shit a while ago.
Oh, man. And we actually recorded in Tasmania those on New Year's Eve.
Oh, cool.
And New Year's Eve just passed, so we call it Happy New Year. And one tune is a New Year's song that we'd always only play on New Year's Day over the years. But we put that on Happy New Year next year. And we got four tunes there, really feeling good about them. People are starting to sing along with a couple of the songs.
Nice.
Now it's beginning. It's beginning again. And then we've been recording. We even did some more recording yesterday. And so we got things. We've got mostly completed an album length that would put out next year.
You're going to put out a new album next year. Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
I think.
I don't know if I didn't check with anybody. I'm supposed to talk about the new album.
Yes, no, it's Fine Dimension.
No Names. We can't tell you what
the album is called. No Names.
No, we can't tell you what band.
Okay.
Can't give you the name of the band, but we all know them pretty well.
Isn't it funny that it seems funny to me?
Violent Femmes.
Isn't it funny that
Names? What names are there that you don't want me to say?
I think the album names.
Like, maybe we don't have one.
We haven't decided the name of the album yet.
I don't know what he means when he says no names. Anyway, go on.
Don't say what the album name is because you guys.
We don't have one.
The album is called "I Am Chris Hardwick" by the Violent Femmes. But
they can cite that on Wikipedia now.
Yes, it's going to be on Wikipedia. They've affirmed it. It's sourced. But it's interesting that people take such ownership over a thing that you put out that they don't want to let. They don't want you to be an artist in the sense that, hey, you did the first album, that's what you wanted to do then, and the second album you want to try something different. People are like, fuck you, why didn't you do this exact thing? And you're like, well, if you just did the same thing over and over and over again, that's not fun.
Yeah, then they complain about that.
Yeah.
So it's a lose-lose situation. So that's the reason why you just go ahead and do what you want.
Do what you want.
There's something that I think is really great about Femmes fans, and it's that it's not a style, but it's an attitude, an approach that they respect. That they're looking for, and that's why I think the new songs are working live as well too. People don't care. They know the band is diverse. They just want to see that attitude come off
and
stage.
I think that's developed over the years. And for example, that second album that we referred to is in its unpopularity, but over the years that's really grown, and we've kept playing those songs live, and they go over great live. So it's really integrated, you know, in with what we do. We play those songs that we stretch out with jazz and improvisation, and we do bluegrassy and country and all kinds of stuff that just mixes in with our music because it's the attitude, and that's who we are. That's what we, you know, with that actually going back still on that, I remember when we toured in England in particular, we were congratulated on the bluegrass and the gospel stuff being like a spoof. You know, like we were making fun.
So you're being
that.
Alternative.
We were making
about it.
Fun of that kind of music when we're sincerely playing to the best of our ability music that we love.
did you tell them, or did you go?
Yeah,
oh, yeah,
yeah, I did. And then I don't think we've gotten much press
in
England.
Well, they thought that was also ironic.
Yeah, it was the irony of it and the alternative and all that.
He's
kind
so
of
ironic. He won't even admit that they're being ironic. Man, that's deep.
There's a cool little fact I think fans will appreciate too that blew my mind a few weeks ago when I asked them. Most bands, when they have their first record, have, you know, maybe 10, 12 tunes, a handful of songs in their repertoire. You guys told me that you had close to 60 or 70 songs before the first album even came out repertoire, which I thought was amazing.
Now, why hadn't you compiled all those into an album up to that point? Was it just not anything that you were...
Well, we made an album within like less than a year of forming the band.
Oh, you just wrote a shit ton of songs right away.
Yeah,
I had a bunch going in. When we first played, I was just in a coffee shop and playing a bunch of songs, and that's when Brian Ritchie first, you know, just joined in. So it's like it wasn't like we started writing songs when we got together as a band. It was like I had been writing songs since I was 15, and actually there's a song that I wrote when I was 15 on every album for the first like 3 or 4 albums.
Oh, wow. Which ones?
On the first album, I remember very specifically. Then the rest, after "Good Feeling," that's the slow ballady kind of one. That I wrote when I was 15. That's on the first album.
Oh wow! And what do you think? Do you have a better idea when you're looking back what it was that those albums were about? Has it changed, or do you think it's always been about?
I'm not really listening to you right now with what you just said because. I sort of heard what you said, but I was thinking, I wrote that song with 15, oh wow, you know, and then we're moving on.
Yeah.
And I realized I wrote some other parts of that song, which the 17 or 18-year-old was able to edit out. That is so important, isn't it?
What?
Yeah, sometimes that can be really important.
Editing. So,
editing out some of what I wrote when I was 15 and kept what now I'm really thankful that now I edited out. There's a, for the people that are really into this and really know this song, Good Feeling, there's a instrumental section which actually goes to a different chord change than's in the rest of the song at a certain part of that, and we play some violin and the feature with the bass and all that, and it's, you know, people like it, I like it. I originally had lyrics in that section.
What?
And I start to just feel like really like uncomfortable and worse thinking of if those lyrics had stayed in.
Oh.
But at a certain point, you didn't ever hear them and decide, do you really want to have those lyrics or did you?
I don't recall anything like that.
Oh my gosh, I'm feeling a little...
Come on.
I'm not feeling well right now. What? Just thinking how close that was.
Well, here's what I want you to do.
Ruining us.
I want you to.
But that's the same.
I want you to tell us the lyrics, and we're going to have your mom come in and talk to you about sex.
All right. Yeah. No, I just took some things my mom had said, and I just put it in, and now I realize no.
Honey, sometimes it's okay to throw it in her can. No, please don't. Please don't say that. Please don't say that.
No, it was a lot more graphic than that.
Oh, no! Well, you know, the problem is, here's the trap. Here's the trap. You always feel like yourself, no matter how old you get, you always feel like yourself in your head. So
that's a good, yes.
Don't you think so?
Yes, finally somebody's saying that.
So
yes.
You know, I'm 43, you're 52. Like, you always feel like you are, and you're the same. So as a parent, when your kids are grown up enough, you're like, we're the same. I could just talk to them without realizing your position of authority.
Authority, and then also... some other words we could come up
with.
But yes, that
and
as
so
well.
And so that's the trapping, is that you have to remember in context that you're not the same anymore. And,
yeah.
And I think in some ways you can open up boundaries. In other cases, you should probably stick to
maintain
some of those boundaries.
Not, you know, for everyone's benefit. Yeah, I think.
Would you ever say what any of the stuff was that you cut out? Or can you not even?
No. I'm trying to forget.
It's forever just locked in your head.
I'm trying to forget. What am I trying to forget? I don't know.
You don't
forget.
Even know anymore what it was. Yeah. I don't even know what we were talking about.
And why are we back to this? I think I've mentioned it again. I'm sorry.
No, you did. Because you
were
making a point.
What are we talking about? We're talking and we're not saying anything.
We are.
Somebody started listening.
You were just
now,
about to tell us those lyrics that you wouldn't tell anyone.
The last minute, they wouldn't have heard anything.
I think you just want
words.
Them to be revealed.
You want. I feel like this is your crime to share these.
These dangling them out there.
These need to come out. These just need to come out.
No, but it really. Now I should like fake cry and say something that's amazing, but I can't do that.
You always be true to yourself.
I can't do that.
You just always have to be true to yourself.
The title of the next record is just all the lyrics you cut out from that song.
Yeah. Ooh.
It is. It's hot.
Actually, there's some cryptic stuff in there. I wrote it cryptically because I thought that was cool. Like, I switched around some letters and stuff.
Ooh.
I'm amazed that...
Yeah.
I'm amazed.
And it's really not... It's not like it was anything terrible. It's just really... It doesn't... It's
Which is so
it's
much
not helpful.
Worse in your own head.
It's not helpful.
Oh, no.
No, the backwards R?
Oh, no. I just mean, like, when you look at it, it's like, oh, it's not even, like, anything bad. It's just... You're like, oh, no. I was so 15.
Yeah, although that's a Russian letter.
Oh, it is. You are right.
Yeah,
it's just funny in a lemonade stand to have a backwards R somewhere. Really helps.
And what's the letter in lemonade stand that becomes an R?
Oh, no, you stick it on there. They're like, oh, that poor guy.
Oh, I thought one of the letters, like the R in letter to
lemonade stand, though.
Lemonade.
Then we're on to things, and you say it's Russian, and we go full circle.
I'm just amazed that anything from when you were 15 survived, because when I look at old stuff when I was a teenager, it's... Like, all of it to me is what you were describing with the part you cut out. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Did you
have stuff that you wrote and was, like, really, and then you looked at it later?
Yeah, yeah. It was either stuff where I was trying to be super deep or super philosophical or super, or comedy. And it was just, like, all of it. There isn't any part where I look back and I go, hey, this kid's got it.
Yeah,
there's nothing.
I made the mistake of letting my girlfriend see my band from when I was 15, our record, and I'm just the laughter and tears she had going from it.
She was not laughing with you.
Tried to laugh, rhyme corner with corner at one point, and she had a real good laugh about that.
That's just
not the way I sang it.
I kind of like that.
That's not bad.
I kind of like that.
Well, thanks. I'm good to go.
Yeah,
let me get that back out.
Yeah, I mean, but as a drummer, is there anything you look back and you go, oh, no, that wasn't... I mean,
maybe just aside from guilty pleasures I had like in the late 80s and early 90s listening to Bon Jovi and certain hair metal bands that I had the posters on my wall. But no, not really, because whatever, it's all in context. Like you say, at the time it hits you, then you move on to something else.
But something that you wrote and something,
I wrote through a lot of like nonsensical kind of stuff. And there was a point where I realized when I was about 14 or 15, I could continue to sort of go down the songwriting path or focus on drumming, and I realized that I wanted to focus on drumming.
You know,
more,
just
so
for fun, you guys should just play all of "Slippery When Wet" by Bon Jovi just once. just do a thing where you just cover a weird album, but as violent yes. femmes, like, because whatever you would do to it would add a whole other filter to it.
Well, we could. I think that we play well, and we play well together, and we have a kind of thing that we do, you know, with that. And so, I think we could probably take any, like, as an assignment, to take any, like, what you're saying, and just say,
like, living on like a prayer.
We could do it. Oh, sure.
Yeah. Well,
I think we could do it. I think we could do
that song's probably three chords.
And make something of musical value or interest, at least to us and probably some other people as well.
Imagine Violent Femmes covering "Every Rose Has Its Thorn."
That would be amazing.
You know, it does come to it. Maybe it's the thing that just pops in my head, which maybe is not. I don't know if it's fair or not fair in relation to this. But "Do You Really Want to Hurt Me?"
Yes,
we did that. We did a recording of that. Do you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah. What? Yeah, you see, this is sort of like what we're talking about, right? Sort of.
So it's
one of our albums. And we took it the way I remember, and maybe it's not the way it happened, but the way I remember is it came to us as a request, just like what you're talking about. And it was like, the record company really wants blah, 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 you know, to do this song. And thought that, well, you know, we never would have thought of that, but we, you know, maybe is there a way for us to do it that we enjoy and we think sounds good? And we did, and we put it on the record, and Boy George said he'd make a cameo appearance on a video, but then there was no funding for the video. In fact, at that time, again, my recollection is nobody could be found who had actually originally requested it.
Boy George killed the culture club?
And also, it's interesting to me, listening to it and getting into it to do it, I either want – there's two choices. One, I didn't understand the lyrics and the verses. Or two, I didn't think they were really, you know, to my liking.
Sure.
Or a combination. I don't know. But maybe I just didn't understand it. That's possible. And I don't know if anyone knows those verses. Most people don't. It's just sort of – anyway, so what I did was I took certain key words and kept them but then changed other words around it.
Interesting.
So that I was actually saying something different, but a lot of like the nouns or verbs were the same, or a lot of them were the same. I tried to keep. And then the chorus was there. So I remember – I haven't heard it for years now, but I remember at the time feeling like this is fun, this is cool, and I think we enjoyed it.
It's already amazing.
I love the, like, the mandolin kind of Italian feel to it.
Yeah, right? I did dances
inside my mind. This is like an Italian opera.
Yeah, I love it.
Can I?
It fucking like just sounds like you guys made the Violent Femmes version of somebody else's song, not like a cover, but it just sounds like, oh, if they wrote this first, this is what this.
Well,
would
you
sound
sort of
like.
You
That's
sort
amazing.
Of derogate it. You took that little raga out of it, which and made it a rock song.
Yeah,
it's
well, we wanted
great.
To find our way to do it and find our way to have fun with it, and that sounds better than I remember. So that's great. That sounded pretty cool. I'm with you. It's like, that sounds really good. Like, wow. I didn't remember that it was that good. We didn't listen to the whole thing, but I would think it's going to have to stay in somewhere in that world.
And you know, and still being a child of technology.
How's it end, do you remember?
Psychedelic
stuff
jam.
At the psychedelic bazooki jam at the end that was obvious.
Let's see if we get to it.
Oh, Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, we... That's
good on that.
Nice. That's you playing that, I assume. Yeah. That's Brian Ritchie playing the bouzouki. That's cool. We had been in Greece probably not too long before that, and we both had bought a bouzouki from the same shop when we ran into each other on tour. We got there early, and we both like show up with a, where'd you get this? Oh yeah, same place. But we've ended up using it on some recordings.
Oh, awesome.
I'm sorry, I said bouzouki. We got baglamas. Those are smaller than a bouzouki. I don't want you to get on me about this. I said bouzouki when
you're about
I really
to go down.
Baglamas.
You're about to go down.
I love that you both have had the. Oh, we use this all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. We have the instrument
impulse buy. Like, yeah, this is weird. We're going to put this on the next three records.
Yeah, it happens, actually. Yeah.
You're the only man who have ever followed up on that. I have so many dumb instruments that I bought where I'm like, this is going to be great.
I just think it's great that I'm still delighted by the world that we live in where, you know, 15 years ago, you could have told me about that and be like, well, you know, if I can get over to Amoeba, I'll go find it and then check it out and then go home and listen to it or listen to it in the car or whatever, and then we could just immediately pull it up.
Well, like you just did in real time, right there. You just did it.
The power of the internet.
The magic world.
It's a magical technological age we live in. So you guys are going to play a couple songs, which is fantastic. What are you going to play?
Well,
what do you want us to play?
Realsies?
American music.
No, I want to... Don't you want...
It's my favorite.
I know American music's amazing.
I know. I want deep cuts, but also I've cried to that song a bunch.
I don't... Well, no one wants to see you cry.
Well, I'm not going
to
cry now. I'm getting closure.
Would you... How about this? Can you play something from the EP?
Yeah. That would be nice.
So why don't... Let's play something from the EP
and then
we'd
do something that's...
And then you could do like... I mean...
Do you really want
to
hurt...
Don't! Fuck my option. Let's do that. I didn't know that was on the table.
I think that that would be one time where... The perfection of the studio recording is such where maybe we won't do it live.
So that's going to be difficult.
Yeah, that would be. That's the only one. Otherwise, we're better live. But that one.
So just, I guess something from the EP, and then if you don't mind playing Blister, I think it'd be a really fun way to wrap everything up.
You're breaking somebody's heart.
Blister the Sud versus the other. Come on, man! American music.
Kyle can go fuck himself.
I think you've got like. Throngs in your corner, you know, supporting you. Although you've got a vocal minority there for American music.
I think American music is
a strong one, but
American music is a song I sing in my head a lot. Like it definitely the hook of it spins in my head a lot.
Do you want to sing on Blister in the Sun? You should take a verse.
What? Why would I? I'm not going to fuck up your song.
It doesn't matter.
Oh, man.
Do you want to sing a verse?
I would if I... No, I can't.
You sure can.
Okay.
That would be great.
What? Okay.
Yeah. Do the quiet verse. The whisper one.
Or you want to like... Yeah. How about that? When we bring it down...
Let's sing a whole verse.
You do whatever you want. You want to sing the second verse and see if you know all the words?
Yep.
But see, now. I feel like I'm being tested. So now I feel like I should pull up the lyrics to make sure that I don't fuck up the lyrics.
You could do that, I guess.
I should.
It's kosher.
Whatever you want to do, you can do that.
Oh my God.
Whatever you want to do. Isn't
live karaoke
your show?
Let's do it.
I don't know. That's sure. Yeah. Okay.
I'll sing some though, right?
Okay.
Is that all right?
Or do you want it to be just you? My only concern is
you can sing the whole song.
You don't want to sing this song.
You can sing the whole thing.
In fact, here, take the guitar.
No.
No. And why don't you sing quietly or whatever level you like in the background American music? Oh. Just because that's what you want to do.
Oh,
so
panic now.
Now I see where your emotions happen.
It's way easier when it's him.
Yeah, it was. I know.
It was cool to nod to him.
You're like, great, great. They're like, me.
You can sort of hear it haunting like, oh, there's American music. Like, you can almost hear it.
I just want to. You know, we like all kinds of music. I had my group vocal prepared.
Yeah. That's a nice one to just shout that out. We like all kinds of music. Did I do it right?
Yeah.
How does it go?
We like all kinds of music.
Oh, man.
I love that.
That's what I sound like?
No, I'm doing the backing vocal.
I think our invitation has just been revoked.
No, our invitation has been revoked. I can't hit your high notes. That's impossible. I'm doing those casual, okay, the bad guys.
All right.
Like we've learned from the Femmes, reinterpret it in your own
exactly.
Yes, do it your own way.
See how quickly it happens?
My God,
you're already
good.
Playing. You're already in
the band. We should start taking up positions by
Take
our
up
instruments.
Positions, yeah. And then what's the first song you're going to put? What are you going to play from the EP?
Let's do the EP so you have a whole song not to listen to, but just get nervous and try to go over your blister in the sun, right?
You know that's what I'm going to be doing the whole time.
Of course you're going to be
doing that. Okay. All right.
I got a little thing about that, which is actually one time with we did a concert with her, and it's when I met Lou Reed, and he said to me, he complimented me on a song called Just Like My Father. He said he really liked that one, and which is not a real popular big song for us, but it goes, "I'm just like my father, but I'm much worse," is the opening line. And yeah, it's funny. I think it's funny, and I think, you know. Anyway, so he said, "Do you know Walk on the Wild Side?" I'm like, yeah.
I've heard it.
Yeah. And he said, "You want to sing it with me?" And I was like, yeah. He's like, "All right, good. You know, like, you know, be on the sides, come on out." And then I'm thinking, I haven't heard the song in a little while. And I didn't have one of these little, you know, phone computers. And it's just like, I'm like walking around and thinking, okay, each verse is about, I don't know what verse he's going to want me to sing. Each verse is about a different person and where they went and what they did. And so I'm just going over, just letting you know, I feel what you're going through.
Well, yeah, but that song in particular, that's a fucking story song. So yeah, everything song. Is
so
like a...
Actually, how easy do you have it? You got it easy.
I mean, I have it easy because I can just pull up right here. I mean, it's eagerly...
I don't know. I think I need to take that from you.
Oh, no.
No,
I
mean, no.
You know, you should confirm that these are the right lyrics, you know.
That's right. It'll be like some different thing. No. Just sing whatever it says. Whatever it tells you to sing.
I'll start singing in Spanish.
All right. But first, we're going to do
but
the other
first
song.
You're gonna do, you're
we're going to do the other song that you're not going to listen to.
I'm going
to
listen.
You should listen
this.
To this other.
I'm
this
excited.
Song's good. You should hear this song.
I'm going to listen with my ears and then shit my pants with my butt about the next song.
I'm watching all right. this.
Check this out. I think this has got some nice lyric twists right. that are have some humor value.
All right.
All right.
Here we
go. This is a song called "Good for at Nothing." I can't do nothing for anybody anymore. Thank God. You know, I once did something for somebody, but what for? Something. Everybody's on the floor. Oh God. Tell me, what are you good for? Are you good
for nothing?
Is that what you're good for?
Are you good at something?
Yeah, that's what I'm good for. I'm
good at something.
That's exactly what I'm good for. I'm
good for nothing.
Did something for somebody, but what for? Ask God. Don't you know I ran for something. Everybody's on the floor. Oh God. Tell me, what are you good for?
Are you good for nothing?
Is that what you're good for? Are you
good at something?
That's what I'm good for. I'm
good at something.
That's exactly what I'm good for. I'm
nothing.
Tell you there's something, something that is nothing. Tell you there's something, something that is nothing. Tell you there's something, something that is nothing. Tell you there's something, something that is nothing. Samuel says. Tell me, what are you good for? Are you good
for nothing?
Is that what you're good for? Are you
good at something?
Yeah, that's what I'm good for. I'm good at something. That's exactly what I'm good for.
Know what's gonna happen next?
I had to pee. The second you said that, then all of a sudden my body wanted to evacuate everything that was in it. So let me go pee real fast. I'll be right back.
So. Here, you can use my microphone.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we'll put you up front, just like Iggy.
I could just sneak in behind Gordon over here.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you bring the mic over here then, so you're in between. Are you comfortable with a mic in front?
Yes.
Yes, I think you're very comfortable.
I'm comfortable. I'm not comfortable playing with the Violent Femmes. That's never happened before.
This is already a pleasure. We haven't even started.
So I'll
sing anytime you want.
What?
It's when I'm alone. Right.
When I'm a walking, I struck my stuff, yeah, that's so strung out.
You're doing great.
I'm high as a kite, I just might stop to check you out. Let me go on, like I blister in the sun. Let me go on. Big hands, I know you're the one.
Do the second one.
Body and feet, I stay in my seat, I don't even know why. My girlfriend, she's at the end. He's starting to cry. Let me go on. Like I blister in the sun. Let me go on. Big hands, I know you're the one.
Air guitar.
So strung out, I'm high as a kite, I just might stop to check you out, you out, you out. Oh man, I'm a walking, I strut my stuff, then I'm so strung out, I'm high as a kite, I just might stop to check you out, you out, you out. I'm a beast, I stain my sheets, I don't even know why. My girlfriend, she's at the end, she is starting to cry.
And weird. My life is strange. I love you. Love you guys. Violent Femmes on the podcast soon. I'm like shaking from nerves.
Yeah.
But you guys sounded
That's
fucking
good.
Awesome.
That's keeping you young. That keeps
I feel
you young.
Alive. I feel so alive right now.
All right, thanks. Thanks for coming. I'll see you soon. Bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Nancy's love story could have been ripped right out of the pages of one of her own novels.
She was a romance mystery writer who happens to be married to a chef.
But this story didn't end with a happily ever after.
When I stepped into the kitchen, I could see that Chef Brophy was on the ground, and I heard somebody say, call 911.
As writers, we'd written our share of murder mysteries. So when suspicion turned to Dan's wife, Nancy, we weren't that surprised.
The first person they look at would be the spouse.
We understand that's usually the way they do it.
But we began to wonder, had Nancy gotten so wrapped up in her own novels?
There are murders in all of the books.
That she was playing them out in real life? You can listen to Happily Never After, Dan and Nancy, early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.